This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
With less than 2% of Africans fully vaccinated, we cannot get vaccines fast enough into the arms of the people.
That's Fiona Atubwe, the new vaccine introduction officer at the WHO Regional Office for Africa, on the challenges of inoculating the continent. Details coming up. Also, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa makes changes to his cabinet. And supporters of Tanzania's opposition Chadema Party are urging the government to release their leader. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The World Health Organization says shipments of coronavirus vaccine to Africa are picking up while the continent continues to grapple with an upsurge in COVID-19 infections. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
After a slight dip in cases last week, the third wave of COVID-19 has come roaring back, with infections rising by nearly 19% to more than 278,000 new cases this week. Also this week, the World Health Organization says COVID-19 deaths have reached a record peak of more than 6,400, bringing the total number of coronavirus fatalities on the continent to more than 172,000. Amid the bad news is the positive prospect of scaled-up vaccine shipments to Africa. Fiona Atuhebwe is new vaccines introduction officer at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. She says there has been a 12-fold increase in vaccine deliveries in the last 2 weeks of July compared with the first half of the month, bringing the total number of doses shipped to Africa so far to 91 million.
We need to be clear, though, in a continent of over 1.3 billion people, this is just a tiny drop in a very large ocean. And in the face of a surging third wave and more contagious variants, vaccine shortages leave Africa dangerously exposed. We have a very long way to go. With less than 2% of Africans fully vaccinated, we cannot get vaccines fast enough into the arms of the people.
Atuhebwe says the vaccines arriving from the United States and European Union are expected to continue, and shipments from Britain will start soon. She says around 110 million doses are expected to be delivered to African countries through the COVAX facility and the African Union by the end of September.
Beyond September, as commitments by COVAX and the African Union and bilateral deals come through, we hope to meet the target of vaccinating 30% of Africans by the end of this year. But we also need up to 250 million more doses to complement the COVAX and African Union doses to meet this goal.
Atuhebwe says it would be a dream to have vaccines manufactured on the continent. She says several countries, notably Senegal, South Africa, Morocco, and Egypt, have the capacity to make it, but not from scratch. For that to become a reality, she says the technology for producing COVID-19 vaccine must be transferred to African countries. She says a waiver also is needed on trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, known as TRIPS. That would temporarily allow African countries to manufacture vaccines for underserved populations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has reshuffled his cabinet, replacing the key ministers of finance, defense, health, and tourism, and abolishing the security ministry while shifting its responsibilities to the presidency in a move criticized by many. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The reshuffle has received mixed reaction. Key to the changes was replacing Finance Minister Tito Mboweni with African National Congress Economic Policy Head Enoch Godongwana. But Kevin Links, an economist at asset management firm Stanlib, says the new minister seemed to have been received well by the markets.
The markets have been fairly neutral in their reaction I think people understand that Enoch has been involved in economic policy development in South Africa for many years. He understands the economic background in this country incredibly well. He understands the policy agenda. He's formulated a lot of our policies.
After the recent violence and looting that left the country's security agencies embarrassed and blamed for sleeping on duty, Ramaphosa sacked Defense Minister Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula and brought in Speaker of Parliament Thandi Modise, also known as Iron Lady. But surprisingly, Police Minister Bekicele retained his job despite his forces failing to stop the looting that dragged on unabated for a week. Political analyst Ncebisi Ndletshana says Ramaphosa wanted to make sure there is a strong individual covering his back in the ruling ANC stronghold of KwaZulu-Natal province, KZN, where Cele comes from.
Well, it would have been terrible to have two ministers from KZN, provincially based ministers, being kicked out of cabinet, because Mkhize is already out, and to have Cele out as well. You know, Cyril still has to watch his back to make sure that he has KZN behind him.
As expected, Ramaphosa dropped Health Minister Zweli Mkhize, who is entangled in corruption scandals involving family members and tenders issued by his department. The abolishing of the state security ministry and putting its functions in the presidency was one of the controversial moves. Jane Duncan, a professor at the University of Johannesburg, explains why.
I'm concerned about the move. I think that it could easily be interpreted as a power grab and lead to the consolidation of power in the presidency in a fairly unhealthy kind of way. We've seen the world over, and particularly in our own region, how when civilian intelligence agencies are located in presidencies, how they become the Praetorian guards of presidents.
Ramaphosa insists it is the best way to protect South Africa.
This is to ensure that the country's domestic and foreign intelligence services more effectively enable the president to exercise his responsibility to safeguard the security and integrity of the nation.
The changes were imposed in 9 ministries, with up to 10 deputy ministers also getting the job. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party held a street protest yesterday, with its supporters urging the government to release their leader, Freeman Mbowe. Police arrested Mbowe in July ahead of a meeting on constitutional reforms, and they are holding him on terrorism-related charges. Critics say the arrest and charges show that President Samia Suluhu Hassan is continuing the same strong-arm tactics as her predecessor. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Dozens of supporters of the main opposition party for democracy and progress, Chadema, appeared outside a court in Dar es Salaam Thursday with placards chanting "Mbowe is not a terrorist" and "Free Freeman Mbowe." A specified number of those protesters were arrested by a group of armed police who were deployed at the area to disperse the crowd. Freeman Mbowe, the leader of Chadema Party, was arrested last month in the port city of Mwanza before his planned address at a meeting to discuss constitutional reforms. Chadema General Secretary Johnny Mnyika says none of the supporters arrested during the protests broke the law. We'll follow up on those who have been arrested by police, but what we're insisting upon is that citizens show up Friday at 9 a.m. to demand accountability in the case. Matias Andrew, a Chadema supporter, was at the scene. We know that he has been arrested because he demanded a new constitution. There's nothing else. If they fear when we demand a new constitution, what do they fear? Andrew asks. If you want justice, why do you fear a new constitution while it comprises components that grant justice to every Tanzania? Mbowe didn't appear in court Thursday. Instead, Authorities attempted to hear the case using video conferencing, but technical problems ensued and the proceedings were postponed until Friday. Peter Kibatala is one of Mbowe's five defense lawyers. There were connection challenges, so we have failed to accomplish the process because there has been poor communication between the video conference facilities here at Kisutu Court and that of Ukonga Prison. We have agreed that tomorrow the accused will be brought to court. Other Chadema supporters like Robert Mwasi say the postponement was motivated by fear from authorities.
Nafikiri ni kwa sababu ya hofu kwamba tulihamasishana wanachama.
He says, why did they postpone the case? I think it is because of fear, since we as supporters have mobilized ourselves. We demonstrate to convey a message to the world, and they see if they try Mbowe, it will be a challenge to them. The Chadema General Secretary told reporters at the court that their party will follow up to learn the fate of their arrested supporters and insisted citizens appear Friday. Simon Siro, the Inspector General of Police, warned against the protests and said the charges facing Mbowe have nothing to do with the Constitution. He says, before the general election last year, I said there are people plans to ban fuel stations and kill government officials. Those who led that campaign have to know that Mbowe is a human being and we have taken him to the court, so let's leave the matter to the authority. Race activists such as David Pinel say things may worsen under the leadership of President Hassan if she fails to negotiate with the opposition. Pinel says this is an issue that can disrupt economic plans and other strategic plans in Tanzania, especially considering the way the president is saying that she's working on the economic first. But the economy cannot prosper if there are no effective ways to deal with these disputes with the opposition. President Hassan took over as Tanzanian president following the sudden death of her predecessor, John Magufuli. At her first days in power, there had been hopes that she'll mark a pause with Magufuli's autocratic rule. The U.S. Undersecretary for Political Affairs, Victoria Nuland, met Wednesday with Hassan and later with opposition leaders and said the United States will stand up for fundamental rights and freedoms. Meanwhile, Mbowe continues to be held at a maximum security prison in Dar es Salaam pending his trial Friday. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Imad Saye, the head of Libya's High National Elections Commission, says voter registration for planned elections in December has been extended 2 weeks until the 17th of August. Registration opened on July 4th and raised the total to over 56% of eligible voters out of Libya's 6.9 million population. Meanwhile, Saif Muammar Gaddafi, son of Libya's former ruler, has announced, as the New York Times says, his intentions to re-enter politics. He is still wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes against humanity. Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed the events with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi.
The acceptance of the results of the election will widely rest with the voter turnout and with the amount of actual or perceived election fraud. Keeping in mind that the turnout of those registered on the voting day has been always low in Libya, just about 22% at the current local elections, this figure of 56% is certainly not enough to provide credibility. I would consider at least two-thirds of those in the voting age to register as a minimum. Emad Saye is fully aware of this and therefore he has extended the deadline. Thereafter, there will be also 30 days for Libyans living abroad to register. Although the number of those registering are currently for the time being quite low, there is also a positive sign. During the last week, there were so many new registrations, up to 30,000 per day, that the registration system faced even technical problems.
Saif Muammar Gaddafi, son of Libya's former ruler, overthrown in the 2011 revolution, who is still wanted by the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity, has announced, as New York Times says, his intention to re-enter politics in Libya. Despite being cautious about whether he is running for president, he believes that his movement can restore the country's lost unity. Does he stand a chance for Libyan presidency, especially if he relied on nostalgia for his father's dictatorship as an alternative to division and infighting?
That's difficult to say, but I believe rather no. However, the more the situation in Libya gets more challenging for the population again, the better his chances would be. Just to name a few, the security situation is slowly deteriorating in some parts of the greater capital of the greater Tripoli area and western Tripolitania, some major fighting almost every second or third day. But also in Benghazi and in south, the situation is deteriorating. There is an ongoing electricity crisis with very long blackouts. There are sabotage acts on the man-made river, endangering water supply for the coastal areas. So the more challenging the situation is getting, the better his chances would be. But the ICC warrant is certainly a major problem for Saif. Even if he were to run and get elected, the ICC would seek to execute the warrant. And there is the example of Kosovo's President Hashim Thaci, who needed to resign after he was indicted by the ICC just last year. Saif would not be able to travel abroad, with a few exceptions of the countries not recognizing the ICC. But even more important, if he would be elected, this would almost certainly mean a return to major violence, as many of the 2011 Tuwar, the revolutionary fighters, would never ever accept him. I predict that probably some of them would already try to assassinate him during campaigning.
Khaled al-Mishri, the president of Libya's High Council of State, told the New York Times that elections are not likely to heal the rift between East and West and may even steer the country back toward war if they elevate one of its most divisive figures, and Saif al-Islam al-Qaddafi may be the most divisive of them all. What could be the scenarios if the presidential elections were basically a contest between General Haftar and Saif al-Qaddafi?
Even if both Haftar and Saif would candidate, which is far from sure, I don't expect both of them in the runoff vote, as they would be pretty much after the same kind of voters. Actually, if both of them would run, this would probably limit the chances of each of them to make it into the second round, because they would steal each other the voters. Not only Khaled al-Mishri, but also other prominent Islamists like Abdurrahman Shweli from Misrata, al-Mishri's predecessor as in High Council of State chair, and great Grand Mufti Sadegh al-Gharyani already announced that they would reject and even fight election winners like Haftar and Saif. And this must be certainly taken for serious. Currently, I don't see any candidate who could gain the trust all over the country, especially if the voter turnout will be low. I can only recommend to the international community to urge all the Libyans to register and to vote and to provide an efficient international supervision of the ceasefire before it is too late. There is a very deep split in the country. I would say Libya could only find to stability through a federalist system, preferably based on the old constitution as an interim tool. This old constitution should be re-implemented by the new House of Representatives very soon after the elections, if they take place.
That was Wolfgang Pochtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi. President Faustine Archange Touadéra of the Central African Republic is on a four-day state visit to Rwanda. His trip follows the deployment of an additional 700 Rwandan troops to the Central African Republic to help secure the road connecting the capital Bangui to the border with Cameroon. Eugene Uwimana has more details from Kigali.
The visit of President Faustin is his first trip to Rwanda since he was re-elected for the second five-year term in March. In his remarks, he said the visit is a gesture of gratitude for the social, economic and military support Rwanda has been extending to the people of his country. He says, in the name of bilateral cooperation, he came to say thanks to the people of Rwanda for the multiple forms of support given to the Central African Republic in its quest to achieve peace and security and economic development.
Economic.
On the matter of security, Rwanda stands as one of the top contributors of peacekeepers' forces. The latest deployment of 700 more troops was made on Tuesday, joining another 1,264 troops serving under the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in the Central African Republic, MINUSCA. Other bilateral economic deals include Rwanda's opening of flights to the Central African Republic, a move that has boosted business activity on both sides. While addressing the press, Rwandan President Paul Kagame said that the visit is a part of Kigali's international relations agenda. He added that countries need to work together now more than ever.
Sustained cooperation across the continent is essential for all of us to be able to succeed. Rwanda is committed to expanding our strategic partnership with tangible results in the years ahead.
This week, the two presidents also oversaw the signing ceremony of four agreements, including memorandums of understanding on mineral exploitation, the development of transport initiatives, a protocol on security reforms, and greater economic cooperation. I am Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Uganda's Joshua Cheptegei won the 5,000-meter run today at the Summer Olympics as Africans swept the top five places. Cheptegei, who currently holds the world's record at both 5,000 and 10,000 meters, aged Mohammed Ahmed, a Canadian citizen born in Somalia, by a half second in 12 minutes, 58.12 seconds. Paul Kipkemio, an American born in Kenya, was third, followed by Kenya's Nicholas Kepkorir Kamili and Uganda's Jacob Kiplimo. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on the Voice of America.